Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati,
you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and England's adopted son, Joe Habib, will join us later. We have a great show for you lined up today, and as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. If you want to call and ask questions or just give your 2 cents, you can call in right now at 323-870-3857. Make sure to hit option one if you want to talk to us. Today we're going to talk about the bantamweight title. The world championship comes home to Cincinnati thanks to Rushee Warren. So congratulations, and we'll talk all about that as we were there live. Shane Mosley is ordered to pay $300K to his ex. That's gangster talk for $300,000. He's still paying her, Robert. Robert, what is he doing? He's still paying her.
Is this for back child support or what, Eric?
I'll get into it, man. It's crazy.
Okay.
It's crazy.
Because Adrian Bronner. Go ahead.
Adrian Bronner, AB, is involved in his own segment, the Adrian Bronner Train Wreck of the Week. You don't want to miss this one. And we debut a brand new segment called Beating the Odds with Beeb, and I can't wait for this one. But first we get started with the fight of the week. The main event from last night, Rushee Warren, Cincinnati's own, versus Juan Carlos Payano. Did you watch this fight?
Yes, I did, Eric, and it was a domination from start to finish.
That's what I thought, too, man.
Yeah.
I was texting B back and forth on this fight because, you know, to me, Warren dominated the action throughout the fight.
Yeah.
He took the fight. He was a lot busier than Payano. He was a lot busier than their first. He was definitely a lot busier than he was the first fight, which I knew that he had to do in order to, you know, to win the fight. He had to be much busier than he was the first fight. Payano, you know, he had his moments, man, but Warren just seemed to be way too much for him.
And now, Eric, you were able to watch the first fight because it was on Bounce TV. What changed between August 2nd of last year until last night? I mean, because everybody made this out to be a competitive fight, is going to be back and forth, and it was anything but. So, since you watched the first fight, what changed in the last, you know, 10 months?
Well, I think that one of the biggest things was he was busier. That was one of the, now, see, I thought he won the last fight fairly convincingly, too. Okay, but if I'm playing devil's advocate here, something he did a lot different was he was able to just stay busier and really outslick Payano. And I thought he outslicked him the first fight as well, and he made Payano really look silly in spots. I mean, Payano would come charging in, and, you know, you're just not going to hit Warren like that. You know, I mean, it's not going to be one of those where you're just going to lunge in, and he's too slick for that. That guy, he's like a mongoose in there. You're not going to catch him with that perfect clean shot. You're going to have to throw punches. And Payano, to me, just didn't seem – he didn't seem, number one, as busy, and it just seemed like Warren was just on a different level. I mean, it really did, and it seemed that way in the last fight as well. If I had one big criticism of Warren on the last fight is that he wasn't busy enough.
Mm-hmm.
And his corner, I was sitting right next to his corner, and they were constantly on him to stay busy. They never let him rest. You know, they were on him completely to stay busy. The scores at the end of the fight were 114-114. One judge had it a draw. One judge had it 115-113 twice. The other two judges had it 115-113 twice for the winner and, of course, new champion. Rushee Warren is a 3-time Olympian and now is the WBA bantamweight champion. Did I mention, Robert, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, he's from Cincinnati.
Yes, you have. Now, with him being
I've mentioned
one
it before.
Yeah. with him being at 118, what's going to be next for him? Because, you know, Chocolatito has moved up now to 115. So I'm wondering if we could
love
see
that fight. He would flatten Chocolatito. I don't think that. I think he's too quick for him. He's too quick for him.
Yeah.
I had the fight. I had the fight scored 118. I give it 10-2 for Warren.
Okay.
How did you have it scored?
I had it 117-111.
Me too. Yeah, I had it 9-3.
Yeah.
I thought it was a convincing victory, and I agree with you 100%, Eric. The big thing was he was definitely putting shots together better, and also when he was countering, he was putting shots together. He wasn't just making Fiano miss and just throwing one punch back at him. He was, you know, putting the shots together after he made Fiano miss. So he was just really maximizing every opportunity that he had in this fight. And the big thing definitely was the timing, and not only that, the hand speed. He was a lot quicker than Fiano, a lot quicker. And he couldn't hit him with a handful of rice in there. It was crazy.
It was completely one-sided. I mean, I thought so too. What did you think of the judges? I mean, as far as the 115, 113, and the 114 all.
Bad scoring. I think
it's bad scoring on all three parts because this was an utter domination. The scorecard should have read. The scorecard should have read 117-111 at least once or twice, and maybe even a 118-110. I don't see how you could give Carlos Piano four or five rounds or even a draw.
Even 116-112 is kind of a stretch in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think this was a wide decision, and. I don't know. You were there live, Eric. So did it? You know, I don't know if you got a chance to watch it. If you DVR'd it and went home and watched it, but did the fight look any different to you live than it did maybe if you watched it at the house?
I haven't. You know what? I haven't watched. I literally walked in the house about an hour ago, I didn't get a chance to watch the fight or anything like that. But I will watch it definitely tonight. And I tell you, man. I mean, when I was down there, and like I said, I was in Rushy Warren's corner. And, you know, I kept texting you during the fight because I'm like, you know.
You did, yeah.
You did. Because the thing is, man, it's like, you know, when I watch the fight and, you know, I'm from Cincinnati. He's from Cincinnati. We've interviewed him before. I've met him a couple of times. Super nice guy. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just being like a homer, you know, and I wanted to make sure that this was the right, you know, the right score. But the more and more I watched that fight, you know, like I said, every round looked like, I mean, I was searching for rounds to give Payano. I really was.
Yeah, you don't want to sound biased. But let me ask you this, because after the fight, it was really emotional. And to me, everyone out of that Mike Stafford Cincinnati camp is a nice person. Where did Adrian Broner go wrong? I mean, everyone else is well-spoken. They're really likable fighters and people. Where did Adrian Broner go wrong here? Explain that.
What's funny is that there was in you. I don't know if you saw this on camera or not. I don't know if it was on camera or not. I was sitting literally like feet away from Adrian Broner, and I was right in Rushy Warren's corner. And there was a whole section. You know, like you have the media tables and everything like that. There was a whole section. But those are usually roped off. There was a whole section of Ohio fighters right there. Robert Easter Jr. was there. A guy named Tyler McCrary, who just signed with a Rock Nation. He's 10-0. He's from Toledo. There was another guy there from Toledo. And I was talking to Tyler during the fight, and I said, are you guys all here for Rashid, you know? And he says, yeah, we're all Ohio boxers, and I said, that's so great. I said, it's so great to watch him get this kind of support from Ohio. You know, I mean, it was so nice to see him get this kind of support. And when they read that decision off, I was just, my heart was in my throat, man, because I'm like, not again. When I heard 114-114.
I thought it was going to be like a draw. Yeah. When I heard that 114-114, I was like, oh, God, what's this going to be, a draw now? Like, I thought, like, maybe one judge would go to Warren, another guy would go to Piano. I was like, oh, God, this can't happen.
But, Joe, to answer your question, I honestly think Adrian Broner hanging out with Mayweather when he was younger and when his career, you know, took off, I think Floyd became a bad influence on Adrian, because ever since he got influenced by Floyd, it seems like Adrian wants to go in his own direction. And I mean, that's why we have an award named after him, because every single week we do this show, it seems like he's getting in some kind of trouble. You know?
And he's involved in the train wreck of the week this week as well, man.
Yeah.
Is he really?
In Rush
Hour.
What
do we do now?
Yeah,
absolutely. Let me scroll down and see what he did.
You
got to
hear. This is unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable. Because, you know, and we weren't even looking for a train wreck this week, and then he just kind of fell into the lap, you know? I was like, he's serious?
Wow. That's bananas.
But I was so happy. I was so happy for Rasheed, man, because he is such a class guy. I mean, he's always. I mean, he's such a super nice guy, man. Always willing to talk to you. Always, you know, just super nice. And I felt very happy for Mike Stafford, who, you know, just what can you say? I mean, he's just been a staple here in Cincinnati for a long time. All the fighters were just in his corner, and I think that says a lot about Rasheed Warren, his character too. That all these guys came together, came out to support him.
Earl Spence was even there. I mean, he said, "Hey, man, we were on the Olympic team together. I got to support my dude," you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And he's a nice guy. I met him as well. He's another. He's a super nice guy. He was posing with everybody. Everybody who wanted a picture got one for sure.
Yeah.
And another guy that was just all class over there, man, for sure.
Yep.
So, the bantamweight title coming home. So,
what's next for Rasheed, do you think?
I don't know. I think he's going to defend his title. He can move up. He can move up after a couple of defenses.
Yeah.
126 is that weight class. You know what I mean? They got a lot of killers out there.
It'd be 122 next, unless he skipped over.
No, I know. But, I mean, but what I'm saying is 126 is where they got the money.
Yeah.
You know, 122 is good, but 118, if Chocolatito wants to move up, I think he gets pasted. I don't think there's any way Chocolatito beats Rasheed. Rasheed's too quick for him.
Wow, man.
Yeah, Rasheed's too quick, man.
Wow.
He's going to be too big. He's going to be too quick.
Okay. All right.
And he may not have those knockout shots, you know, but you ask Payano if he doesn't hit hard.
Yeah, well.
I
bet you his first title defense, if they do it right, will be in Cincinnati, Eric.
They should. I'm hoping.
Yep.
Well,
like Tim Austin. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying another Al Heyman fighter, Jamie McDonald. That could definitely be a good fight.
Yeah, would be a good fight at 118, and McDonald has the title. Yeah,
I was just thinking that. That seems like a natural, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, they got good fights. I mean, they got really good fights. I don't know if they necessarily want to see him and Payano again. I thought it was a rout both times, to be honest with you. I thought he won the first one big, and I thought he won the second one even bigger.
No, I don't want to see Carlos Payano again. He looked awful.
Let me say this, because Robbie and I were talking about this card. We were somewhat critical of it on paper, saying that, you know, why is this card on primetime? Why is it on NBC?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I have to say I really enjoyed the card, and I thought it was better than I expected. And
Joe, you put the
I thought it overachieved.
Joe, you put together a hell of a performance last night. We'll talk about that here in a little bit.
I thought so too, and I think that the fighters, honestly, I think that gets back to the fighters. I mean, they're not stupid. They know what's going on too, and you know, they may not hear everything in the media, but they know when people are talking about the card, you know, and when it's a lousy card and everything like that, and on paper. And I think that only elevates them to, you know, try to make it a good showing. I think it really does.
Yep.
And so much for the main event being a mismatch, huh?
About that. Talk about the co-main event here, because we'll call it the co-main event.
I don't want to jump the gun.
Versus Joe Smith Jr., man, in a Windy City shocker. Joe Smith Jr. came in. What was he, a 14-1 underdog, I heard?
Yes, he was.
A 14 and just completely pasted Andrew Fonfrey at 232 of the first round. It was a counter right hand, and it came from the floor. I mean, Fonfrey had him hurt, and he had him hurt. He ran him to the ropes and ran right into that right hand. I mean, he dropped his left hand, and boom. I mean, he hit him clean. Fonfrey got back up, and I knew he was hurt because he fell against the rope. He got up way too fast. He didn't collect himself or anything.
Yes.
And then he just crashed into the ropes. It was allowed to continue, but a couple more combinations, and that was it, man. Fonfrey, that was it. The referee stepped in. That was it. He laid him out. So Joe Smith Jr. out of Brookhaven, New York,
Brookhaven.
Now 22-1 with KOs. Yeah,
enough,
how about that?
Brookhaven.
Man, I think he'll get another fight on PBC. What do you think?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And not only that, this is a guy that works a full-time job and he's boxing at the same time. And I got to say, he looked in phenomenal shape. He was, like, shredded to the bone. He looked great. You have to commend the guy like that for coming in, top-level condition and being able to just put on a performance like that, not even being a full-time fighter. And I loved at the end of the fight that today, so what are you going to do next? You think you're going to be a full-time fighter from now on? He said, hell yeah. That was really good.
he basically said, well, whatever Joe LaGuardia wants from me, that's what I'm going to do next. You know?
Yep.
So
this guy is definitely
on
the map now. He definitely put himself on the map last night, no question about that.
And he
just
smashed all hope for a Fonfrey-Stevenson rematch.
Hell,
yes,
we might see a Stevenson-Smith fight. What do you think? who knows?
I think he jumps all over that. I think Adonis Stevenson jumps all over that. Because I've got a feeling that Adonis Stevenson thinks he can, put him out,
Yeah, he'll jump all over that, and he might wind up in the same condition that Fonfrey is.
Oh, man. It was funny. I was there, and we knew, being in Chicago, that Warren couldn't headline. You have to put, Fonfrey or something like that. Fonfrey, with the Polish crowd in Chicago, it's a huge Polish contingent there, so it's a lot of fun, especially in the arena. There's so much energy when they come in there and everything like that. Incidentally, I got there. The time I arrived, Andrew Fonfara's entourage was there right in front of me. And Fonfrey came out, and I saw him before the fight, and he looked so relaxed. I mean, he just looked cool as a cucumber, man. I thought, he's going to destroy this guy. And, wow, what an outcome, man.
Eric, do you think because, we as boxing fans didn't know who Joe Smith was, do you think that Fonfrey is in the same condition? Like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what to expect. So do you think he took him lightly?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that he didn't know who he was. He definitely saw a video of the guy. I mean, he definitely saw the guy on tape. And anybody with 17 knockouts, you're going to have some power. 22-17, he's got some power. 21-17.
Yeah.
He has some power. So, I think he was aware of him. I think that, like everybody else, they thought that, Fonfrey was going to run right over the guy, and I think he did too. He was so confident. I mean, he had the look. He just looked so calm and so confident up when, like I said, I mean, at the check-in counter, when I got there to check in, he was there with his entourage, and it looked like he was there to watch the fights. He was that calm. And so, I think it's one of those things. He just got caught.
Yeah.
Because he was beating the guy, for as long as it lasted, obviously. But he had him hurt. He had Joe Smith hurt, and I think he rushed in. He made that mistake of dropping his hand and rushed in and got clipped. And that could happen. I mean, that could happen.
Maybe Joe Smith wasn't really as hurt as Fonfrey thought he was. He looked like he was, but he recovered so quickly, didn't he?
That's true, too. He may have maybe baited a trap. I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
maybe he saw
so quickly.
He saw something on tape. I mean, who knows?
In the interview after the fight, Joe Smith said he watched him on tape and he saw that Fonfrey left too many openings, and he knew that he would be able to take advantage of one of his openings, and he left an opening, and he said, I took full advantage of it. It wouldn't surprise me if we don't see this as an immediate rematch of some sort.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Adonis has
got
a fight coming up. Yeah, Adonis has got a fight coming up, so it would not shock me to see a rematch. The crowd, it was funny because the crowd, a largely Polish crowd, went nuts when Fonfara came out. I mean, there was flags everywhere, everything. I mean, they went berserk when he came out. And as soon as he landed, as soon as Smith landed that right hand, that crowd went silent. I mean, and Joe Smith had like a very small cheering section over to the side, right by his corner, and then he had like another one, just a real like a few people over on the over on the other side.
Right.
And I mean, they just went nuts when it happened. I mean, they went berserk, man. It was great. It was so great to see that. You know, I mean, it was really neat. So
awesome. You know, this is why we love boxing, guys. I mean, here me and Beeb, we were talking about this card yesterday and about how bad we thought it would be and why is NBC putting it on a prime time. And then when you sit down and watch the fights and you get a story like this one, this is what boxing's all about.
Yeah. So we're gonna have the PBC haters, but you know, even when the cards sometimes like the Algeri Khan fight, people are like, what's going on with that one? And that one turned out to be a firecracker. So, I don't know, man. Maybe these PBC cards are blessed. I don't know. I'm not saying all of them are great, but they're better than advertised. I'll tell you that.
Right.
They're a lot better than the ESPN cards we used to get.
That's
you
correct.
Know? I tell you what, they're a lot better than that. Or the CBS cards or the USA cards. I mean, these are like top-notch guys.
Yeah.
That we're seeing now that we don't have to tune in for HBO for and all that other good stuff. So
it's free.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the other fight on the card on the main TV was Erickson Lubin versus Daniel Sandoval. And every time I see Erickson Lubin fight, this guy gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
He stopped
More
Daniel
committed.
Sandoval in the third round. Bout was waved off. I mean, Sandoval was just getting crushed. And at no point, I mean, everything that Sandoval tried to do, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't hit him.
The whole night.
He was just playing catch up ball the entire night.
You know, I know he's only had a few fights. I think he's 15-0 now with 11 knockouts. But I think it's almost time to step up his competition because the people they've been putting in front of him, he's been disposing of them way too easily.
Yeah, he's crushing them.
It's time to step up his competition, don't you think?
Yeah,
I would agree
maybe.
With that. Yeah, I would agree with that. But, you know, you can't rush him. The worst thing you could do is rush him too fast.
Right.
You know, you want a slow burn here, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And the big thing is once you get up around and over that 20-fight mark, that's kind of the indicator that you got to start going. He's only got 15 fights, so he's got a little bit of time. Maybe when he gets up to the 18, 19, 20 fight level limit type stuff, then maybe you want to push him a little bit more. But he's still got some time where you can kind of gradually move him up instead of kind of –
I don't know. I just think it's time for an increase because he's disposing of these guys way too easily.
The big thing now is he's really sitting down on his punches and he's really getting leverage on them and he's making a concerted effort to really go after guys now once he has them hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty good. It's good to watch. Anyway, that's a
good old Jack and Sledge there. You know, you don't like they said. Well, which one worked? He said I had both of them working. You know,
absolutely, no question.
Yeah. So.
All right, and then and I don't know if this one was televised. I believe it was the Seletsky.
It was on the NBC Sports Network.
Yes.
They switched over. You know. Yeah.
I watched it. It was a good fight, man.
Yes.
It was a good fight.
Seletsky versus Hugo Centeno Jr.
Yeah.
And this actually made up with the Polish crowd for the Fonfara fight. Seletsky, man, is such a good fighter. I've seen this guy fight before. He's a very good fighter. And, you know, this was a one-sided fight. This was a very one-sided fight. And I was texting my dad during the fight. He was watching it. And I said, it was like the 10th round. And I said, you know, I think if he presses the action, he can get him out of there. And sure enough, yeah. man, in the 10th round, he really pressed the action and
wow.
got him out of there.
He
the referee
he really hurt
stopped
him.
Him.
Right
yeah,
now.
He really did. And he's not really known as a knockout guy.
No.
No, and no. And
he's 23-0 with seven knockouts.
And every time I've seen Hugo, he's always looked horrible. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, I hate to jump on a guy and kick him when he's down. But Eric and I were even texting each other, and I mentioned to Eric, I just think this guy's overrated, and he's always been overrated because he's been so highly touted. And each time I see him fight, I'm just less and less impressed. Very stiff, doesn't move his head very well, telegraphs punches. Keeps his hands down by his chest. Every time he throws a punch, he lowers his hand before he throws it. He's just, he can punch a little bit, but again, he's like, he's got a sign written around his neck that, hey, I'm throwing the right hand now. So it's like, it's just, I don't know. I'm just not impressed with this guy, with all due respect. I just never
mm-hmm.
have been.
No, I never have been.
I've been told. I mean, he's unbeaten 24-0.
Yeah, and people kept telling me, oh, this guy's good. You got to watch out for this guy. I just never was impressed by him every time I saw him fight.
No, every time I've seen Hugo Centeno Jr., he's never looked impressive.
No, not at all. Not to me, anyways.
No. And, I mean, he was he almost seemed not willing to engage at points. You know, and maybe because he felt Selesky's power, I don't know, but...
Well, he always looks kind of indecisive in there, like he's thinking too much. I don't know if you've noticed that about him, but he just never looks, like, natural in there. Nothing he does is instinctive. Everything he seems to do looks forced to me. And, you know, last night was no different than any other fight that I've seen from him. He just looks like he's forcing, trying to force things... And not letting things just unfold and let things just be, you know, flow freely. He just doesn't look like. He just doesn't look like he has that like natural ability. I mean, that's what I've come to the conclusion of.
And Eric Brown's a decent trainer. I can't blame this on Eric Brown. He was telling him what to do, but the guy can't do it. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I mean, I'm just kind of, you know, curious to see how he went 24-0, you know, after watching that, after watching him fight Selesky, man. He was just pounded. I mean, he really was. I couldn't really give him any rounds. I mean, it was a one-sided beating, you know.
I can't talk now.
It was a tough night for him. Very tough night for him. So,
you can put it on. You can.
All right, so let's talk about the upcoming fights here.
Okay.
So let's see here. On June 24th on Telemundo, Ricardo Rodriguez versus David Keanu, 10 rounds, junior bantamweight. So once again, that'll be on Telemundo. And then in Beijing, so you'll have to stream this one, Javier Fortuna versus Jason Sosa, 12 rounds for Fortuna's WBA regular junior lightweight title. All right, and then the big one on June 25th. There's a couple of big ones this day.
Yeah, we got
we'll
a
talk
few
about
of them.
This one. We'll let Beep take this one in a few minutes. Keith Thurman versus Sean Porter.
Yes,
yep.
12
sir.
Rounds for Thurman's WBA welterweight title.
And that's on CBS.
Oh, Mike, am I looking forward to that one?
Yeah.
I am looking forward to that
one. This is, you know what's funny, though? Is I'm looking at the undercard, and it doesn't seem to be a lot of David Benavidez versus Francine Tietou, 8 rounds lightweight, light heavyweights. Adam Kolnacki versus Jesse Barboza, 8 rounds heavyweights. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of names on that undercard that would get
me
to
tune in.
Can I
ask you a question?
Wasn't
Abner Mares originally supposed to be on this undercard when it was first announced?
Yes, that was the first fight was postponed.
Yeah,
he was in an interesting fight, but I guess he pulled out of his fight as well. So,
Morris actually failed his physical.
Oh,
and they didn't
wow,
actually release
that.
Why.
But
okay. Yeah, Morris actually failed his physical, and due to HIPAA rules, obviously they. They did. Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
They did say
oh,
it didn't
wow.
have anything to do with blood tests or urine tests, like no PEDs
oh, okay.
or anything like that.
No
so
STDs,
not
none of that stuff either, huh?
So I wonder what I wonder what CBS is going to do, because that was supposed to be the big lead-in fight
just keep going on with the card. Every time, and I don't know why, every time I think of somebody, you know, pulling out for a medical, I always go back to Freddie Pacheco when he talked about Tommy Morrison pulling out.
Yeah.
And Freddie Pacheco said Tommy Morrison, he was like, you know, he failed his physical, and he said, man, I just hope it's not what we think it is, or I hope it's not what they say it is, or something like that. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So I keep going back to that, man. So I hope all is well in the Morris camp, and he'll be back, hopefully.
Yeah.
On the 25th, on Showtime, Anthony Joshua defends his IBF title for the first time against Dominic Brazil. 12 rounds for Joshua's IBF weight title. And also, too, on that undercard, George Groves versus Martin Murray. My man, Martin Murray.
Oh, that'll
12
be
rounds,
a good
WBA
fight.
Middleweight eliminator.
Now, are we going to be able to see the are we going to be able to see the George Groves fight?
I don't know. That I don't know. I would think you're going to see all three of these, but I don't know. Chris Eubank Jr. is a third fight on this card versus Tom Duran, 12 rounds for Eubank's British middleweight title. So that should be good. Dylan White also on the card. Anthony Ogogo also on the card. They're fighting the dreaded TBA.
Okay.
And on PBC, on NBCSports.net, from San Antonio on the 25th, Justin Deloach versus Junior Castillo, 8 rounds, junior middleweights. And Ryan Carr versus Luis Solis, 8 rounds, welterweights. Also, on Unimas, the 25th, the 25th is packed. Mike Alvarado, Mile High Mike, versus Josh Torres, 10 rounds, welterweights. Matt Korobov versus Brian Vera, 8 rounds, super middleweights.
Unimas.
So how about that? So let's talk
about
before we get into the big fight, let's talk about the other big fight, the two big guys here, Anthony Joshua versus Dominic Brazil. Does anybody see this any other way other than a Joshua knockout?
Hell no.
This is child abuse.
I can't wait for Dominic Brazil to suffer the same fate that Charles Martin suffered.
Oh, look at you. Come on.
I've never been a Dominic Brazil supporter, and I hope he gets a nice big paycheck, and I hope he gets a comfortable flight home. But he's going to be put to sleep, and probably sooner rather than later. I'd be shocked if it goes past 5 rounds.
Oh wow!
Me too. I'm taking Joshua knockout within 6.
Yeah.
What about you,
Joe?
Joshua and 4.
There you go. See?
Sorry to say.
There you go.
Same. Not happy about saying it, but that's what I think. Yeah.
There you go. Nice.
Absolutely.
Nice. All right. George Groves versus Martin Murray, 12 rounds, the WBA super middleweight eliminator. I got Martin Murray, man. I can't go against my guy. Martin Murray.
Yeah, I got Murray too.
Yeah, I also have Martin Murray. I don't think George Groves can handle Murray.
Martin Murray is a pretty good defensive fighter. He's a good counter puncher. Keeps his hands pretty high, and catches shots. And he's a catch and shoot type guy. He catches the shots and he fires right back. And he's got a way of sucking guys into traps too. And he's a pretty decent puncher as well. Good body puncher. Pretty all-around decent fighter, solid fighter. George Groves, they're always going to question that chin. And, you know, it reminds me of Amir Khan, in the fact that he always seems to make that big, major mistake in a fight that really turns the fight around in a negative way for him, I should say. So it's just pretty sad.
And also keep one thing in mind. Martin Murray, out of all of Triple G's past opponents, gave Triple G fits. It took Triple G 11 rounds to put him away.
He's solid defensively.
Yeah.
He's got that turtle shell defense, brother. That's what I'm saying.
It took him 11. So for all you Triple G haters out there, here's a guy that actually gave Triple G a hell of a fight, and it took Triple G 11 rounds to actually put the dude away. So no,
Robbie.
George Groves. you know, he's going to go home with an L.
And if you recall correctly, I was the one to pick Martin Murray over Triple G in that fight. And,
that
you know, hey, look,
yeah,
man, not
did.
For nothing.
Yeah.
Not for nothing. I thought Martin Murray was winning that fight.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know if it was not.
Okay.
He wasn't
winning. Yeah, it was competitive, though. It was competitive at the points. It was competitive at the points. Like,
he had his moments, man.
Go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, man, the first thing I said is that Martin Murray needs to stay off the ropes. And
yeah.
within the first 30 seconds, he's on the ropes getting pounded by Triple G, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, man.
He held his own, though.
But he put up a good fight. Absolutely.
Yeah.
None to be ashamed of. None to hang your head about.
Let
me tell you this next fight with Chris Eubank and Tom Duran. This is a big, big fight for young Chris Eubank Jr., because if he wins this, and he's going to have to win it, and he's going to have to win it impressively, I think he gets a shot at Triple G next. He has been calling Triple G out. Eddie Ahearn,
he wants it.
He's the only one that I'm seeing coming out saying, hey, I want the fight.
really wants it.
You know what? That's the rumor I
yeah.
keep hearing, man. You know, because Chris, he's been very vocal about it, and you know, he keeps saying, send me the paper, I'll sign it. You know, I'm ready to go, you know.
That's funny.
So.
That's funny.
Well, how do you think he holds up against Triple G? Do you think he beats Triple G, Beeb?
No. I favor Triple G over everyone, but you know what? He could make the fight interesting. I just think Triple G is just too good for everybody right now, man. That's why
yeah.
I want to see him go up to 168. I'm sorry. People keep hating when I say that, but I'm going to hold on to that belief that he needs to go to 168, and he could probably dominate up there, but I just think it'll be, you know, more competitive up there than it is down at 160, because
from what I hear, Triple G is even willing to go to London to do this.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm hearing, too. I'm hearing he's willing to go to London for sure, so.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
yeah. All right, so before we talk about our next fight, Beeb, I'm going to kick it over to you. We're going to play your intro here for Beating the Odds with Beeb, our brand new segment.
And now it's time for Beating the Odds with Beeb. Starring Britain's adopted son, Joe Habib.
All right, what an intro. Thank you for that, Eric. Well, it's been a while, and Beating the Odds with Beeb is back, baby. And what a better fight to return with than Showtime Sean Porter versus Keith One-Time Thurman. Now, in my opinion, despite what the odds makers say, this is as close to a 50-50 fight that you're ever going to get. Porter is a plus 195 here, and Thurman is a minus 235. Like I've always said, when you can get odds on a 50-50 fight, then you should jump on it because it's a good value play, in my opinion. Now, let's break down the styles here. Thurman has been labeled as a seek-and-destroy type fighter, but recently he's employed more of a box-and-move type style as his competition has steadily increased. Likes to dart in and out and really doesn't stay in the pocket long. He uses his legs to carry himself out of danger, and he's not a guy who relies on subtle head movement and body movement to evade shots. Now, Porter, on the other hand, possesses more of a rugged style. He likes to either jab or feint his way inside, and he tries to overwhelm his opponents with a barrage of punches up close, in the pocket, to the head and body. Now, Porter can land that lead right hand from the outside as well, but the end game for him is to get up close and apply that steady pressure. Now, Porter's lone loss to Cale Brooks was nullified to some degree by Brooks clinching him when he got inside and punching off those clinches before the referee could step in and break him. Even though Porter lost that fight, I still think it was somewhat close and competitive. I also think that Porter has learned how to not accept that clinch on the inside and fight effectively out of it instead of waiting for the referee to break up those clinches. Now, he seems to have been fighting even more aggressively now, and he's throwing more punches. With all that being said, though, I don't think that Thurman fights anything like Cale Brook at all. I also don't think he's as big or physically strong as him either. Now, in my opinion, I think fighters like Diego Chavez, Robert Guerrero, and Luis Collazo all gave Thurman problems when they got up close, and Collazo even hurt him real bad with a body shot. Now, the difference, in my opinion, between Porter and all those fighters is I believe Porter is more explosive, more athletic, and much quicker than all of them. I believe Porter's foot speed could trouble Thurman a lot in this fight. He may not be able to get out of harm's way because of Porter's foot speed and his ability to come off the ring. He may be in Thurman's chest faster than Thurman can anticipate, and because of that, I think Porter could have his way with Thurman on the inside. I also believe that Porter will be the most athletically gifted fighter that Thurman has ever faced. But on the other hand, you know, you could argue that Porter has faced just as good of athletic fighters as Thurman. Guys like Brook and Adrian Broner, for example, you could argue that they're just as athletically gifted Thurman. So, in my opinion, Porter's resume arguably could be considered slightly better than Thurman's. So, let's cut to the chase. Who wins and why? Well, beating out the beef is going with Sean Porter in this one because of his quickness and his ability to fight effectively on the inside, whereas Thurman has shown vulnerabilities fighting up close. And I think Porter can exploit those weaknesses, and I am looking for him to outwork and outmuscle Thurman up close and winning a decision. So we are taking Porter with the plus 195 here, and that is our official pick, baby.
Wow. Sean Porter to pull the upset. How
That's
about
right.
That?
Almost a 2-1 dog wow. here, and I think that he is totally live. Totally live here.
I don't know, man. I tell you
any
what.
Any opinions on this? Any
absolutely, yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go.
Man.
Let's be that.
All right. So, Keith Thurman, to me, is a better boxer than Sean Porter. I really think that.
Okay.
I really think that
okay.
he's a better boxer than Sean Porter. And I think he's going to look at that Kell Brook tape over and over again on how to
All
deal
right.
with that pressure. And I think he's going to use his jab.
Okay.
And I think he's going to clinch him as soon as he walks in. Now, has Porter learned to deal with that clinch? Well, we'll find out because Keith Thurman is going to test him because Keith Thurman is a strong fighter too. Porter, though, for as many punches as he throws, to me, he's not a knockout guy. You know, he couldn't do any damage to – I mean, he didn't knock out Kell Brook. He couldn't knock out, you know, Adrian Broner, and not that Adrian Broner is a tough knockout or Kell Brook is a tough knockout. But we've seen Keith Thurman. He's got power. You know, he can put you away. And I think that that power is going to nullify a lot. I'm taking Keith Thurman to win by a decision. I don't know what kind
okay.
of decision, but it'll be a by a decision. Robert,
okay.
what do you think?
I'm riding with Ohio here, and I'm riding with Showtime Sean Porter. The person that lives in Ohio is going against Ohio's son, so I don't know what we can say about that. But, I firmly believe that Showtime is going to put on a show, and Keith Thurman is going to suffer his first defeat.
Wow.
It'll be,
so what do
it'll
you
be,
think now?
It'll be a decision, by the way. Go ahead, Eric.
If Keith Thurman wins this, is he now the man in the welterweight division?
Yeah. Well, I think with whoever wins this, Eric, they'll be considered the number one person in the division, and their next fight will be Danny Garcia. It's
yeah,
in the
I
cards.
Mean,
wow.
With Mayweather,
money fight.
With Mayweather and Pacquiao gone, you could argue that, but you could also argue if Porter wins, he still has that fight looming out there that he needs to avenge with Kell Brook. So an argument could be made that either the winner of this fight or Kell Brook is the man in this division. But, you know, outside of Kell Brook fighting Sean Porter, his resume has been really, really thin lately. So
yeah,
you may want to elevate
Vargas
this guy.
Doesn't help that, by the way.
No, not at all. So you may want to elevate the winner of this fight to possibly number one status in the welterweight division. That would be more than fair.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
But,
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I also think in the near future, though, the man in the division is the one we saw on TV yesterday, the truth, Errol Spence. I think he's eventually going to face all of these guys. I think he's eventually going to face all of these guys, and I think he's going to prove to be the man in the division.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think as far as the money goes, I think the winner of this fight, man, is going to command the money.
Yep.
You know.
And Danny Garcia is the next on their hit list.
Beeb, let me ask you, how is Keith Thurman going to deal? Because, you know, how do you think he's going to deal with Sean Porter's aggressiveness? And do you think that that Keith Thurman's punch is going to be enough to keep him off him? Because, as you know, with an aggressive fighter, you got to have something to keep him off.
Well, the problem is Keith Thurman likes to go in and out. He likes to create space, and it, obviously, as I mentioned, he uses his legs for defense. But the problem with that is he's never been in there with a guy who's as quick as Sean Porter, particularly with his feet. So I think he's going to have a hard time, timing Porter and catching him with something that's going to keep him on the end of his punches. So if he's got to have to catch him perfectly coming in. He's got to time him perfectly coming in, because if he can't, and even if he does hit him, but he doesn't hit him flush and clean, because Porter also has a way of getting low, making himself a compact target. So he ends up hitting him on the top of the head or not really landing flush on him and brazing him a lot when he's throwing these punches, then I don't see him keeping Porter on the outside, keeping Porter out there. So he's going to have to really be on his game with his timing. He's going to really have to time those on-rushing attacks from Porter, and he's going to have to stop him in his tracks before he can get in that comfort zone deep in the pocket. And that's a big key to this fight. But can he do that? Because if you look at the resume, guys like Guerrero, guys like Collazo, guys like Bundu, they're not particularly quick fighters. He's never really fought a quick fighter yet. You know, Diego Chavez, not a quick fighter. You could argue that at least, you know, Cal Brook's got some speed. Adrian Broner's got some speed. Porter's fought some pretty decently quick fighters. You know, I just don't think that Thurman has. So,
who has the better resume here?
I think Porter has a slightly better resume. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too.
I think Brook is better than anyone by far and away. You can even argue that Broner could beat, Collazo, that Broner could beat Guerrero at this stage. So,
yeah.
Adrian Broner and Cal Brook could possibly arguably be better than anyone that Thurman has on his resume by far, in my opinion.
This is one of those fights, man. It's like a 50-50 fight, like you said. I mean, it's like a 50-50 fight.
Yeah, it really is. In the boxing hardcore fans' minds, but the odds makers are seeing something that we're not. And they were wrong last night, so it's quite possible they could be wrong next week as well. And boy, were they! Boy,
they
were they
sure
wrong
were.
Last night. They were really
14-1. They were wrong.
So we'll take
absolutely,
that, right?
Absolutely, man. Very good, man. Well, I can't wait for the fight, man. It's going to be an amazing fight. I really think so. And no matter who wins, I think you ought to tune in because, like I said, it's going to be a dynamite fight for sure.
Wow. All
right, let's go ahead and move on to our news and rumors. Me too. The big news this week, man, Canelo Alvarez ordered to pay $8.5 million. Canelo Alvarez has been ordered to pay All-Star Boxing $8.5 million. The judge ruled that Golden Boy was not at fault, and they didn't have to pay a dime. I still think they got off pretty cheap, considering all the fights that Canelo's been in, all the big for the Mayweather fight, and all the big fights, the pay-per-views and everything. They actually got off pretty cheap here. But
yeah.
Canelo is on the line for $8.5 million. What did you think when you heard this story?
I was surprised, but you know what I said to myself? It's going to be a long time, if ever, if All-Star Boxing collects $8.5 million because, Golden Boy has got a legal team that's definitely going to help Canelo, and they can just sit there and continue to, do appeals for this, do continuances, and before you know it, he may not even have to pay a dime of this, so we'll see what happens.
Well, in part of the decision that I read, Joe, they said if Canelo appeals, then the financial penalty goes up, and he actually is going to owe All-Star Boxing even more.
Can they do that? Really? Wow. That seems to be unprecedented to me. I've never heard something like that. So I'm not denying it. I'm just saying it. I've never heard something like that.
Well, this is what Steve Kim pointed out when he read the decision
last week.
Steve
said it. I believe it.
Yeah.
Steve would know.
I don't know if it's a California thing or where this case was filed, but apparently the judge ruled if anybody appeals, in other words, if Canelo appeals, the financial penalty goes up and All-Star Boxing gets even more.
You know, I know Canelo's made some good money in his career, but, you know, I got a question. Does he have 8.5 in liquidity laying around there that he can just give up so easily?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, we're going to find out how good Canelo has handled his money.
Huh.
I tell you, and no surprise here, Canelo Alvarez is set to fight September 17th, which is Mexican Independence Day weekend. No opponent is known as of right now, but he's definitely set to fight. One thing you can bet the farm on, it's not going to be Triple G.
No, unfortunately it's not. And that's the fight it should be, but unfortunately it's not.
Smart money is going to say probably Lemieux. Lemieux is handled by Golden Boy, so David Lemieux will probably be his next opponent, but again, hasn't been set yet. And they've thrown around a bunch of names, and you know they're not.
Well,
I've heard
Lemieux. I've heard Liam Smith. You know, those are the two names I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard them both too. So, yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. All right, let's move along to our train wreck of the week this week. Our train wreck of the week involves our very own Cincinnati's own Adrian Bronner. And
do you really
want
to claim this guy?
Yeah, no, I really don't.
Anyway,
so,
go ahead.
Yeah. All right, so I was seated, like I said, I was seated in press row right by Rasheed Warren's corner. And literally feet away from Adrian Bronner. Adrian Bronner came in during the fight, like right around the first round, okay? He came in around the first round and hugged Mike Stafford and everybody, and he sat behind the gate, or the barrier. So there's a barrier where it separates, like, the commentators and everything like that, and then you have press row behind the barrier, and then you have the crowd after that. So Adrian Bronner sat, like, in front of the barrier where, you know, with the trainers and everybody else. Robert Easter Jr. was there. He was told to get behind the barrier. So he actually went behind the barrier, no problem, you know. So Adrian Bronner is in the chair, and he's shouting instructions to Rasheed Warren as the fight goes on. You know, no big deal. Well, he stands up out of his seat, and he's yelling instructions and actually walking toward the ring at one point. And they actually had to place a security guard next to him. A PBC official, he was in, he had a suit on, he had his, you know, badge on and everything like that. And he told Adrian, he said, you know, look, he says, you can shout instructions, I don't have a problem, but you have to stay seated. And Bronner just kind of waved him off, you know, and he's right next to him. So this goes on for like a few more times. Each time Adrian stands up, the guy stands up with him. Then Adrian gets irritated with the guy. Bronner looks at the guy and he says, man, you're tripping. You know, just really snotty, you know. This goes on and on, and next thing I know, Bronner, it looks like he's threatening the guy. And I hear him say, what are you going to do? You're not going to do anything about it to this guy. I mean, this guy is just a regular guy. I mean, this guy is just like a regular security guy. I mean, he's going to be no match for Bronner. But, I mean, Bronner was, like, really trying to intimidate this guy and everything like that. As the fight went on, he was doing the same thing. And he was cursing at the guy and everything. The guy was just trying. I mean, the guy was actually nice for letting him be there. You know, he could have made him go on the other side of the ring, you know. But, you know, he was nice enough to let him stay there. Pretty soon, two other security people came over. I don't know if they were security or not. But one lady came over and another guy came over. And you could see them really trying to calm Bronner down. It was just like, wow, you know. But none of it changed. None of it changed. And it looked, like I said, man, that he, you know, didn't, I don't know if he, you know, he looked pretty menacing. Put it this way, if he was in front of me acting like that, I would have thought maybe he was going to take a swing at me at some point. That's what it looked like to just a regular guy. And I was just kind of appalled. Yeah, I mean, just appalled by his behavior. You know, I mean, the guy's, like I said, I mean, he's trying, I mean, you know, really, he could have cost the fight, you know? I mean, if they decide to eject him or he does something stupid, or he's almost a liability right there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah,
boy,
I just thought
it
was just deplorable behavior.
You know what? He's got the perfect nickname because he is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like he can't stand when attention's not on him.
And like I said earlier, I think it's the Floyd Mayweather influence. You know, he sees Floyd getting in the news all the time, so why can't I?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's one of those guys that have to have attention on him 24/7, and he's got his little clique with him or whatever, and they all just kind of follow him around and the way he acts, I mean, he's, you know, supposed to be treated differently for some reason because he's Adrian Broner, he's a champion or something like that. You know, this is what I was talking about earlier with Rasheed Warren and Adrian Broner. I mean, Rasheed Warren is a class guy. I mean, nothing but a class guy. You never see him act like that. Never.
Never.
In a million years.
Never.
You would not see that guy act like that.
You wouldn't.
And he's not an attention-seeking guy. That's why you were so happy when he won that title. And then with Adrian Broner, it's like, what is wrong? Why does this guy act like that? Why are you going to, like, puff out your chest to a security guard like that? You know that if he decides, you know, at one point I saw him say, you know, don't touch me, don't put your hands on me. The guy never touched me. He motioned in front of him, like, to stay seated or don't go any further, but never put his hands on him. You know, it was just, I mean, to watch him do that, it was just like, come on, man.
Yeah.
It was just horrible behavior. Horrible.
He hasn't grown up yet, man. Has
Joe Smith is the good side of boxing. Adrian, the problem Broner, is the bad side of boxing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Can't,
and it was just like, just... Yeah, just awful behavior, man. Hate it. I hate it because he's associated with Cincinnati, and everybody's going to look at it like that, you know? And they probably, you know, he's over there, and the guys, all the boxers from Ohio that were over there, there must have been about 20 of them, over by my, you know, where I was sitting, and they had to, like, you know, you see them going over there trying to, like, calm him down also.
Yes.
And it's like, why does this need to happen? You're a grown man. You really can't take care of yourself. You know, you really can't handle authority that much. You think you have the run of the place? Come on, man. It's not even you that's in the ring. Come on. All right, so let's move on to our next topic here. Shane Mosley ordered to pay $300,000 to his ex, Jin Mosley. According to docs obtained, I got this from TMZ, Shane Mosley must pay Jin Mosley $180,000 in back child support from December 2014 to November 2015. He also has to pony up about $85,000 for his share of the tax debt the couple owed. To add insult to injury, Shane's got to pay Jin's attorney fees to the tune of $50,000. It's been a pretty force. Shane claims they were never really married, and Jin two-timed him. This is a mess, man. This is you remember us talking about this one? They were talking about this, that Jin got to keep his belt.
That's right.
And wasn't there a reality show where he was living in her basement?
That's right, because he had nowhere else to live, man.
He was living in Jin's basement?
Jin's
basement. Because I guess she got to keep the house.
She let him stay there after she divorced him?
Yeah.
And, get this. Guys would come over. She'd be dating other guys. They'd come over, and they would try on Shane's belt.
That's what I was joking about that. I was like, they're probably coming over there trying on his belts, like, in the mirror, like, up in Shane's bedroom, tying up his belt, like, hey, yeah, just look on me.
And now we know why the guy's still fighting, because he's got to pony up the dough, man.
That's horrible, man.
You know, he didn't make anywhere near that in his last fight.
Yeah, oh my.
You know, that's I'm crazy. Surprised we haven't seen, like, pictures that has, like, some dude in his room, like, trying on his belt.
Yeah.
So what was the name of the reality show she was on? What was the name of the reality show she was on? Like, Bravo's Friends to Lovers or something like that?
Yeah, one of those.
Wow.
Where, yeah, or maybe like almost like a Hollywood Housewives kind of thing or something, you know, along those lines.
Do they show Shane in the series too?
I believe they did, yeah.
I believe they did.
Did
they
but
show
I know
Shane
she was
living
dating.
In the basement, actually?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not your quintessential basement. I mean, it's a nice basement. I mean, it's, you know.
Okay.
Hey, for those that are listening, with 12 minutes to go in the NBA season, Golden State 76, Cleveland 75 at the end of three quarters.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Cleveland 75?
Tune in.
Yep, 76-75 at the end of three. 12 minutes to go. One more quarter.
Well, guess who we're pulling? Me and Eric are pulling for Cleveland, baby. We're pulling for LeBron.
I know
LeBron.
You are.
LBJ in the house.
I want to see it stay right where it's at.
LeBron, baby.
Don't worry about it. Golden State's going to blow it. Deontay Wilder, man, heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder is suing Alexander Povetkin for $5 million. He was guaranteed 70% of the $7 million. So Povetkin tested positive, as we talked about, for meldonium. Same stuff Sharapova was using. Fight was called off 6 days before the bout, and hopefully he gets it.
Yeah, no, he deserves every penny he can get.
Yeah, he didn't take any drugs. And
no.
The WBC still has not ruled on this.
No.
Still
what
has not.
What the hell's our problem? What the hell's our problem?
Yeah.
We got to call up Mauricio Sulaiman, man, and find out what's going on here, man, because something just don't seem right.
Yeah, ain't right at all. I tell you what.
No.
We'll get to more nonsense with Sulaiman in a second here. But
yeah.
Santa Cruz versus Carl Frampton's official for July 30th. It'll take place at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So
and
I can't
also,
wait for that fight.
And also on that undercard is Daniel Jacobs against Sergio Mora, the rematch, which is not deserved, by the way.
Everybody wants to see, you know.
Yeah,
so, okay,
crazy.
So let me ask you. Sergio Mora is the regular WBC champion or WBA champion? What is he?
No, you mean Daniel Jacobs.
Daniel Jacobs, that's right. Daniel Jacobs is regular champion. He was supposed to fight Triple G. So when does he get stripped of his regular title?
As we're learning with the WBC, these organizations do what they want when they want. So in other words, Eric, I don't have an answer to your question.
This is ridiculous. All right, so check this out. More nonsense from the WBC, all right? Jorge Linares, who's the lightweight champion, is now the champion in recess. Somebody want to explain to me what the champion in recess means? All right, the WBC has named their lightweight champion as Dejan Zlatakanin. He's their current champion. Anthony Crawla and Jorge Linares will fight September 24th. Jorge Linares will put his WBC diamond belt on the line, which is worth about as much as a cup of coffee, all right? Anthony Crawla will put an actual WBA championship on the line. He'll actually put a title on the line. The diamond belt cannot be defended because it's not an actual title. It's a decoration that they give you at the fight. It's not an actual title.
But
you cannot defend it.
But yet they're billing this as a unification bout.
They're calling this a unification bout. Somebody explain this to me. But this is the
it can't be explained.
It's moronic. They have a lightweight champion. They've named Jorge Linares the champion in recess, whatever that means. And somehow the Crawla Linares fight will be a unification fight with only one actual title on the line.
Crazy.
I don't get it. Adonis Stevenson will return from a 10-month layoff to fight Thomas Williams Jr. on July 29th. Beeb, what do you know about Thomas Williams Jr.?
Well, he's knocked out. What's his name recently? Edwin Rodriguez.
Yeah, he was the one that fought on Fox and knocked out Edwin Rodriguez a couple of months ago.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Definitely remember that.
That's right. Now I remember that guy.
Yeah.
Do you think he stands a chance against Thomas Stevenson?
No.
Not really.
Well, the thing is he's just been so inactive, man. That's the thing.
Yeah, the problem with Adonis Stevenson is, you know, you just said it. He's been out of the ring for 10 months. This is a guy that Stevenson probably should handle with ease, but since he's had that layoff, how serious is he going to take this fight? And when is he going to get a real fight? That's my question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. Very true. Now, I would have loved to seen him rematch Fonfara, but that went by the boards last night, man. That's for sure.
Yeah. No.
That ain't going to happen.
I mean, with the way they're picking opponents for Adonis Stevenson, I wasn't joking earlier when I said maybe Joe Smith gets the next shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't hate that. I don't hate that.
No.
Won the fight. What are you gonna do? You know?
Yeah.
But I think eventually he's going to have to take the winner of Kovalev Ward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Kovalev Ward, that is set for November 19th. They will both have interim bouts this summer, and if they get past those, they will fight on November 19th in the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Kovalev has already lined up his interim with Isaac Chalemba, and
yep.
Andre Ward is not set yet, so he will have an interim bout, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and the name I keep hearing in the local area here, Alexander Brand, who he was supposed to fight in November.
Wow.
Interesting.
Crazy, huh?
Because remember, Ward was supposed to fight Brand on the Cotto Canelo undercard.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Eric.
Very good. Money May back in the news. Floyd Mayweather buying another jet. He bought a second jet to go along with his first one because, you know, when you're flying one, you got to have two, you know. Floyd's rep says it's a 12-passenger Gulfstream 3 with gold cup holders, a gold sink, gold accents throughout. It has all white leather seats and a fully stocked kitchen. How about that? They sold a similar for several million dollars. We don't know how much Floyd dropped on this jet, but quite a bit.
Yeah, crazy.
Good Lord Almighty. How much money can one man spend?
Pretty safe to say he'll be fighting again.
Yeah, we say that every week.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it could be quite possible, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our last piece of news right here is Arthur Beterbiev. He has decided not to compete in the Olympics. Both him and his promoter, Jean Michel, has said no to the Olympics. They said they've kind of decided against it. I think it's probably because of the public backlash that all the pros are getting for going into the Olympics. Somebody's going to break this and somebody's going to go in there, but so far no real name pros have decided to go to the Olympics for boxing.
I think you're going to see it in 2020 instead of 2016 because Lomachenko has already said that he's going to make sure he qualifies and gets another gold medal in 2020.
Think so?
Well, that's what
he
said.
I think
so. We'll see.
I think once they open those floodgates, once one good guy goes, once one name guy goes, it's going to open the floodgates. And like I said, the U.S. is going to have to follow suit or else they're going to get demolished in boxing. They already get demolished in boxing. I mean, you know, so this could elevate their program. I mean, so I don't know, man.
And I feel bad for for all the amateurs who are true amateurs. The Olympics is their stage, and yet the Olympic Committee has decided to take that away from them and give it to the pros.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's it. Any final thoughts from you guys?
No, I mean,
Robbie's engaged in the game right now.
We have a good week of stuff coming up next week, and Eric will be on vacation, so it'll be me and Beeb hosting the show next week, and hopefully Eric will be able to call in and tell us how wonderful his vacation is and what he thought of Porter Thurman.
There you go. Yeah, we'll be at Eric Free Sunday next weekend.
Yeah.
So. But I'll be holding it down, man.
That's right. Look at the Beeb. Beeb is in charge. Beeb, any final thoughts?
I'm really excited for the big one next week. Two big ones. I think, we had a light week this week, but I think next week will more than make up for this light week that we had. And I'm real excited. What else can I say?
Awesome. I tell you what, my final thoughts go out to Rasheed Warren. I am so proud of him. That gym down there with Mike Stafford, the OTR gym with Mike Stafford, Rasheed Warren, all the boxers out of Ohio that came and supported him. Couldn't be prouder. Couldn't be prouder of what he's accomplished here and putting us on the map here at Cincinnati. Just a great, great story. And I'm especially proud of the Cleveland Cavaliers who are about to do Robbie's team in their own crib.
Oh, it's 81-78 with 9 minutes
meltdown.
To go.
The complete meltdown. Unbelievable. What a banner week for Ohio. How about that?
That's crazy.
All right, well, listen, man, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and fights. You can catch Joe Habib on Twitter at jhabib1 and find his YouTube channel at www.beatingtheoddswithbeeb.com. I'm at Ringside73, and we will catch you next week.
All right.
We'll see you next week, everybody.